everyone, and welcome to Linux for the Rest of Us, episode 173. This is a show about Linux. We talk about all sorts of Linux-related topics, whether it's hardware, software, whatever tickles our Linux fancy. And by we, I mean myself, Cody Cooper, a.k.a. Supercoop, a.k.a. the Ice Machine, and my good friend, the Linux Maven, Steve McLaughlin, a.k.a. the Door-to-Door Geek. How's it going, Door?
Hey, Cody. Going pretty good here. A little bit of a crazy week. We overreact with weather here. We had, I think, 2 inches here, and the state of Maryland closed down, so I didn't have to go to work.
2 inches of rain?
Snow.
Oh, it's been over a year since I've seen any of that. I don't know how to, I don't have a frame of reference.
Well, the reference I'll give you is by 11 o'clock, no plow has came by my street yet. I could see the street because the sun melted away most of the snow on the street.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, just some areas of the East Coast I've seen several feet.
Mm-hmm.
Pictures of people opening their doors and the snow is up to their eyeballs, which is quite interesting.
And we are not them. Now, I do believe south of Baltimore, they got possibly 6 inches. So I guess I understand why it was closed. But, I know, like, it seemed like 6 years ago or so, the state of Maryland wouldn't close unless there was, like, 2 feet on the ground. Now, lately, it seems like they're a little bit quicker to close. And I'm okay with that. I'm cool with that.
Yeah, after a while, everybody realizes, wait, we get to go home or we get to stay home? Oh, yeah, just post that.
Yeah.
Make that phone call. Yeah, we've no crazy weather out of the Northwest, just rain as usual. A little bit of ice one day a few weeks ago, but that was about it. And I drive slower like a rational human being, and then I don't run off the road.
I don't know how to drive rational, so,
Yeah. Well, let's just dive right in. We got an email from Pete Reynaud. I probably butchered that, but that's okay. He wrote us in today. And he asked, Dor and Cody, I've been listening to the Podness Network for a long time. Love the shows that are here now and miss some of the ones that have pod faded. Philly Tech guys. Oh, that brings me back. Me too, Pete. So he says, Dor, a long while ago when you had your Linux video series out, I bought it and watched every show. Learned some new things and even had an old PC running Mint. Now here is what I want the recommendation for. I want to build my own machine and install a distro. My needs are simple. The machine will you be used to surf the net, do email through Thunderbird. I even toyed with the idea of having a mail server since I have a domain. The standard things like LibreOffice would also be among my list of installed programs. What kind of resources are we talking about, CPU/RAM, etc.? Any suggestions on a distro, Pete? And he writes, P.S., any updates on how Steve C. and Steve D. are doing? First of all, Steve C.'s still plugging away on Android App Addicts, so if you are into Android at all or just want to listen to the guy's voice again, he's been hosting that show for over 300 episodes, so go check that out. And when was the last time we heard from Steve D?
2 days ago, 3 days ago or so.
Oh, there you go.
I hear from him on Voxer semi-frequently. He's okay. He's still up in Long Island, New York, doing his New York thing. He's had a lot of life changes, and by that I do not mean surgeries changing right. His driver's license. I mean just a lot of changes in his life. He doesn't do computer repair of any kind anymore. He still likes his eBay stuff, but now he works as a gas fireplace technician.
Oh, yeah, he spoke about appliance repair on Nuts at Night, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay.
So, bottom line is, as long as he's happy, I'm happy, but I still once in a while egg him about doing some kind of podcast.
There you go.
Yeah, now let's get to the bulk of the email, okay? Well, yes. Steve is also at the producerpodcast.club, I can't remember, and the EDMer podcast, where if you listen to Android App Act, he says that URL, so that's another way to listen to him. We had to get back, though, to the other point of the email, which is, running the Linux distro, hardware recommendations. This is kind of like the like softball. We can go anywhere with this.
Yeah. So he says he wants to build his own PC. So let's just throw out the possibility of any sort of pre-built unit whatsoever, no matter what it is, because that's what he wrote in that can help us narrow this conversation. So my recommendation, because I built several machines over the years, so is Dor, is if this being tax season, if you're not planning on buying all the components outright right now, start getting stuff that is going to be useful with any kind of machine you ever build. So if you don't already have maybe a good mouse, keyboard, monitor, you don't need to go high-end. Just get something cost-effective, something that's going to suit your needs. Me, I've always gone out of my way to buy a slightly better case. You can find, just bargain bin cases, $25, $30, $50, $60, just about anywhere. The company that I buy my cases from is called Fractal Design. They have a number of models, anywhere from like $60 up to $300. I could post some links in the show notes of the ones that I've owned over the past, but the money I've invested in the case, for instance, the one I'm running now, it's completely silent. And they have custom foam they put on the inside of the case, near the fan compartments, the side panels, everything, to where you can't hear anything no matter what's going on in there. So that's nice. But for the software that you said you want to use in your email, it sounds like it's kind of on the lower end as far as specs go. So I'd say 4 gigs of RAM, because the price difference between 2 and 4 gigs of RAM is probably not that much. And by getting 4 gigs, you're kind of future-proofing yourself for maybe an upgrade to the machine in another 2 years, 3 years, so on. And then you got to think, well, do I go AMD or do I go Intel? Linux is working really well on both of them. You can let budget dictate what you're going to get, but go on the low to medium end if you're trying to keep the budget down, obviously. So like a Core i3 would probably be perfect for you. Even some of the lower dual core options, as far as some of the Intel processors are being released now. But look within the $20 or $30 range, plus or minus that, and you might get into some quad core that, like I said, better investment moving forward. Aside from that, I mean, really consider CPU, RAM, and your hard drive. Now, Dora can speak to the power of SSDs. I don't have an SSD in my machine yet.
Dude, SSD is just lightning. It's like going from dial-up networking to cable. Once you go that, it's hard to go back. The boot time is so sickening. Mm-hmm. It like literally will cause it's almost like you're on a roller coaster ride going over the hump. You get that uneasy feeling in your stomach because it's just so, that's how the boot is with an SSD. It's so unbelievable. Then you get conditioned to it, then you come to expect it. So yeah. Don't go SSD unless you're ready to go SSD for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Tip number one for me. I'll say if you insist, and I don't even want to say, if you want to build something, you can, but I'll say most modern Linux distributions, you could literally go to a pawn shop or, a used place and just get anything. As long as it's above a P4 and as long as it has like a gig of RAM in it, it's going to run fine. And by fine, I mean okay. If you want to build something, since nothing said gaming
right
in his description whatsoever, and to me that's a clear differentiator of hardware, mm-hmm. I say try to go pure Intel. Intel everything. Intel NIC, Intel processor, Intel everything. Video. Intel video. Okay? That should be the most stable platform for normal, quote-unquote, desktop work, Soho office kind of work, or just your normal browsing, Facebooking. What I encourage you to do, you really don't need more than a gig of RAM, 2 gigs of RAM, but for LibreOffice, load times, stuff like that, I do encourage more RAM. And really, the sky's the limit. If you want to go 8, go 8. You really don't need to, but if you want to, go 8. In Linux, the only time you really need processing power and SSD is if you're doing heavy stuff like video transcoding,
mm-hmm.
or super high pixel density resolution images kind of thing, or you're saving video files out. You don't really need that stuff. For normal desktop behavior, RAM is probably going to give you the best bang for your buck. It's going to make LibreOffice load quicker. Thunderbird, if you have a large, I can't remember what it's called on Thunderbird, but like a PST file, an inbox, if you have a large,
right.
RAM will help with the load speed of that as well. Pure Intel, I think, is the best route for normal, quote-unquote, desktop use for Linux. You mentioned PC Perspective,
mm-hmm.
I believe, in the Voxer.
Yeah.
That, to me, is a golden resource of compatibility. I'll say that, because whatever they're putting up there has been hammered, tested unbelievably, and they are solutions that fit together, that work together, and you don't have to worry about, well, this RAM says it works, but it doesn't work. You don't have to worry about that. And I'm going to look real quick at my Voxer. Lord D put a link in the chat like a day or two ago of another website he was using to build his computer, and he said it gave good compatibility rating between pieces.
And while you're looking that up, let me throw this in there too. It sounds like from your email, Pete, that you put a lot of thought into what you might want to do. And trust me, from being that home service tech and from helping my friends and family members build machines all the time, be very realistic to what you want to do, because it sounds like you've gone through a checklist in your head. You wrote us in, wrote into us, but then you don't be that guy, Pete. Don't be that guy to go, oh, and I also want to do high-end gaming, because then it's the whole other ballgame. Or, oh, I also want to edit some video, because then it's a whole other ballgame. So if you know that those two are out of your realm, then, yeah, you could do quite a bit. Dor, did you find the website?
No, not yet. I'm going to look in. He also has me in a penetration testing Voxer group. Let me glance in there real quick, too.
Sure. But aside from, so yeah, if you want to go brand new parts, what I'd say is buy the most stable parts first that aren't going to fluctuate in price. So basically, you know, get your peripherals, then your case, if you care about what the case looks like or what kind of options there are. And that's it. I it's not just aesthetics. Depending on what kind of case you're getting, it will be drive placement, how you can manage your cables for airflow, what kind of options you have as far as switching components out later, etc. So there's a bunch of stuff to take into consideration with that. But work your way basically from like the flesh of the machine, the peripherals to the flesh, then the case, then go inward last. So if you're buying a piece by piece, buy your motherboard and your CPU last. Your motherboard, CPU, and video card last. If you even need to buy a video card, if you have very limited use cases for the video, then onboard video for any halfway decent motherboard should suit your needs. And if it doesn't later on, yeah, then just you can plug a video card in later.
Yeah, and I'm also going to make sure there's a link to PC Perspective, which is, I believe, just PCper.com.
Yes, it is.
That's Ryan Shroud. He was, we actually had him on an episode of Podnuts, 5 years ago. Talk about a guy with passion. I mean, that's him. The other website is actually called PCPartPicker.com. I'm not going to say it's Ryan Shrout of hardware evaluation, but with this site, you can literally go and custom build your computer from scratch, design it all on a web page. It does try to tell you when hardware will or will not be compatible. I can't vouch for it, though, but it's better than just going to Newegg and putting pieces together.
Mm-hmm. So there was one other point I wanted to make with that. So when it comes to the SSD, if you have existing hard drives already that you could use for storage, I'm talking like, you know, for the majority of the files you would have in your computer, then you don't need to buy 120 gig, 250, 320, 500, 1 terabyte SSD. Get a 60, a 40, 60, or 80 gig. You're going to save a lot of money, but by going with the smaller storage size, because realistically, you should only have your OS and some space there for files you're accessing frequently that would benefit from the speed. But as far as storage, like if you're, you know, you're like your music collection, if you're creating content, you don't put it on the SSD. The less read and write cycles you can put that through, the better lifespan the drive's going to have.
I'll say technically, yes. But you're also getting into a more complex installation where instead of just going through the guided wizard for the installation, you have to go in and pick something else or advanced, where you actually have to put your root partition, your slash partition on the SSD, and then put your slash home on your second hard drive.
That's a good point.
And I'll say this. I was very anal about SSDs before I had an SSD, about you have to be utterly careful about the write cycles, you have to be utterly careful about what you put on it, you don't want to exceed the maximum writes, because with spinning hard disk to SSD is just like going from analog TV to digital TV. Old analog TV, the further you got away, the weaker the signal got, and it slowly degraded down to where it would take you a while before you actually got no signal, nothing. Where you would first get a little bit of static, then you would get just a little bit of more static and a little bit of hiss, but you could still watch it. But now with digital TV, you either get a signal or you don't. There's nothing in between. Mm-hmm. With SSDs, they don't really show signs of fatigue. They just die. So I was very, I don't want to say paranoid. I was overly protective in my opinion about it. Now with SSD prices where there are, I almost say I don't care. Just throw everything on SSD. Because they're getting down to the price to where if you want to replace it, you do. You should treat it like anything else and just make sure whatever you have on that drive that is important, regardless of spinning disk or SSD, have it someplace else. Back it up. If you want to go for the more complex installation, do it. Try it. Do it because it will help the health of the SSD. But to me, it's not something I say you have to do now.
And in regards to... So before we move on to this distro suggestion, I do want to make another recommendation for you. So I, one of the things you didn't put in your email is how long you've been a Linux user. So another great way to procure some hardware, much like what Dor was suggesting as far as going with a used machine, see if you have a local user group, and they usually run like install fests where they have a weekend where they just show people how to install Linux. Now, one of those guys might be looking to unload a machine or some hardware, or they might know a guy in the local area that has a machine, in which case you might get a great deal on some hardware that's not that old or that will meet your needs. So that's another possibility you're going to get a good machine. I will never recommend anybody go buy a computer on Craigslist, so I can't, I won't say that anyway. But as far as what distro to run, if you've already run Mint, consider just straight up Ubuntu or Debian. The guided installs on both of those are pretty good. If you feel comfortable within that environment already, then maybe dip your toe into OpenSUSE. I would say as far as the RPM package manager versus something that you're already used to, it helps build your skill set a little bit. Never hurts to know different routes of going about getting software and exposing yourself to different environments. For instance, if you ever run KDE or run maybe GNOME 3 or XFCE, maybe experiment with one of those. But I would say Ubuntu, Debian, or OpenSUSE, or maybe Manjaro. That's another good one I'd recommend for you. All of those, with the specs that I said and most of what the Dor set to, should run on one of those low to mid-range machines with not a lot of specs. Because nowadays, a lot of them, with CrunchBang going away, we're seeing a lot of this sort
it's
of...
not going away. Somebody else picked up the mantle.
Yes. Yes, because it's one of the best named distros ever, and it deserves it. Yes.
But if you're running a distro called CrunchBang, you should expect it to break sooner or later, and that's what the original developer said when he named it.
Yeah.
I'll say, if you're not comfortable picking your own distro what to run, ask whoever you're going to ask for support. Okay. And I'll say this: this has always been since episode 01 of Linux for the Rest of Us. If you want me to support you, I have no problem. All you can do is send me emails, ask me questions, hit me up in Voxer, Google Hangouts, whatever. I got no problem helping anybody at any point in time. I don't care if every listener to this show sends me an email in one day. I will get back to them. It might take me a couple days, but I will get back to every single one of them. Don't discount OpenSUSE. OpenSUSE has gotten a lot better, to be honest. Mm-hmm. It's running on my QBox right now, and it's actually, I'm very impressed. Yes. At how far OpenSUSE has gone.
And let me interrupt you really real quick right there. The one thing, another great thing they have going for them is the documentation and the how to get started guide literally on their website. You read through that. If you have any hesitation before installing it, you read through that and go, wow, this is really laid out in easy to understand terms, and I'm going to have this document as a reference for anything I ever happen to go through. Amazing start.
Yeah, OpenSUSE has the best, by far, professional yet effective website when it comes to support, help, documentation, or anything about their distribution. It's great. If you ask me what to run, I'll tell you anything, because I'm not trying to sound dumb. If you ask me questions on Slackware, I don't know Slackware. but I have resources available to me that I can contact that will help me help you with Slackware. If you pick Arch, I have resources that me that I know I can get in touch with who can help me with Arch, help you with Arch. I'm a big fan of Ubuntu just for one reason. And everybody out there that says, again, I said this last week, you're tired about me talking about Ubuntu, I don't care. Go listen to something else. There's nothing out there more stable, okay, long-term support. Nothing else has the longer long-term support cycle, number two, and with a combination of active developers, active development, active applications, new applications on the market. So if you ask me what to run, I'm going to probably tell you Ubuntu, because if you come to me and say, hey, Dor, I need to run an application that does this, it's going to be the easiest for me to find an application that runs on Ubuntu that meets your needs. So I'm a fan of Ubuntu for that reason. Does that mean it's going to be my distro in 6 months, 8 months, a year? No. Just means right now, with it, where everything lays, how everything works and functions, the broadest support, the easiest support is Ubuntu.
There you go. So, Pete, hope that helped you out. Please write us back later. Let us know what you did, what you installed, and your experience, and we'll read it on the show again.
Yeah, and I'll say, don't forget, people out there, if you do not want to build a custom computer, you can go to ThinkPenguin, browse their offerings, and if you see something that you like, do not hesitate to contact us at podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com, and I will give you a coupon code that you can use towards your purchase. I just ask, if you do not use the coupon code, please let me know so I can give it back to somebody else. Never underestimate support, period. Mm-hmm. These guys support their customers, number one, and they support the developers, number two. They don't just support one distribution. If you put in their order ticket that you want Arch as your operating system, they'll put Arch on your computer for you. They don't care. They're not like other Linux, quote-unquote, distributors where they only put certain distros on because, you know, they're, let's just say, not educated enough, or they don't have the depth of knowledge to support more than one distro. So go to a place that supports the community as a whole and not just individual distributions.
Very good point, Dor.
Okay. I have more than a couple links. Now, the first one I'm going to throw out there, I just stumbled across this, literally just stumbled across this. I don't know how, I don't want to say real this is, because that really sounds insulting. I don't know how deep this is going to be. I don't know how good this is going to be. I don't know how long this is going to be around. But right now, if you go to bundlestars.com, they have packages, bundles you can buy for a very low price, and they say Linux support. Okay. We all know, we all have heard of, we've all played with the Humble Bundle in the past. Well, what it sounds to me like, everything with the Humble Bundle is now extremely hit and miss. And when I say extremely hit and miss, that's a very little bit of hits with a hell of a lot of misses on the Humble Bundle, whether or not you're going to get Linux support. These guys at least make it sound like Windows, Mac, and Linux is the goal of every one of their bundles. Okay, right now you can go, for instance, pay $2.49, and you can get what they say is $120 worth of games. They call it the Trinity Bundle. I guess Trinity is the maker of the games. But if you're looking for another game bundle feed your need, this might be it.
I have never heard of this before, and with me being, I mean, well, Dor and I are both gamers, let's face it. But yeah, I just watched a part of trailers for three of these 10 games, and they look beyond up my alley. So I'm definitely going to buy this. Here's the thing, too. Yeah, with Humble Bundle, yeah, you're right, whereas early on, they had a lot of great support for Linux games. A lot of the games that they had in bundles were available on Windows, Mac, and Linux, or Windows and Linux. Here, there's a bundle of 10 games. Every single one of them are available through Steam on all three platforms, which I've never seen in a bundle before. I don't think ever, to have every single one of them available. Yep. And the average price is only $250.
Yeah. Well, no. That's just what it is. There is no... Right now,
oh, there's no fluctuating price.
Exactly. With Humble Bundle, there's a game they play, where if you get in really early, you can pay less, and then you get their bonus stuff or their extra games kind of thing. And it's really, I don't like how they do that. And then even then, after you buy it, you have to pick who gets what money. Almost trying to guilt you into giving them more money. That's just my personal viewpoint from my goggles I wear on my head. Where this place, it's just pay $250 or $249. That's what it seems like to me. Now, maybe tomorrow if I log in, it will say $350. I don't know. But right now it says $249 and it said it all day.
I'm buying this like immediately after we get off the show. Because the four games I just watched, 15 to 20 seconds of footage, I would pay at least $5 for each one of them.
Right.
I mean, this is fantastic. Yeah, so bundlestars.com. There's a current bundle available. As of right now, there's still 13 days left, so you have plenty of time to get in on this bundle by the time you listen to the episode, because it'll be posted in less than a week. And bookmark this site, bundlestars.com. Check back, because I'm sure that And here's the thing, too, is that a lot of these games, I would guess, based on my experience with installing Linux games through Steam lately, are going to run on moderate hardware. Nothing in here is going to require a high-end, you know, a GeForce card or a Radeon card, just by looking at it. I would bet money that is the case. But yeah, wow. What a fantastic value. This looks awesome.
Yeah, and my goal is to have my quote-unquote Steam bundle built up pretty good, pretty fair here by May, my oldest son's birthday. My goal is to get him a Steam machine somehow, some kind of Steam gaming rig, and I don't expect to get an i7 with a whatever video card kind of thing. I expect to get him something fair, something decent, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The wife keeps thinking I'm okay with her getting him a Wii U, and which I can't make her comprehend that when you buy into that, first off, you're not just buying into any game console, you're buying into a game console and dedicating X years to be able to only buy those games. It's a very limited scope of games. Yes, the games are specifically geared for this hardware, so they should run good, quote-unquote, but the range, the scope of games is much less on any one console versus a computer, and that's what I'm trying to get her to comprehend.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'm going to do it, and she doesn't understand. Well, I think she does, but she doesn't agree with me. Paying more up front for a Steam machine, paying less for each game, is bigger payoff in the end.
Yes. So there are pros and cons, yeah, and we could wax philosophic about that forever. Bundlestars.com. Check it out. It'd be worth your time and your money.
Yeah, I definitely bought it. Haven't had a chance to play with any of the games, but I just wanted to support them just because it's competition to the Humble Bundle. Okay, next is a link. It's technically Linux related, but some people will be mad. And once again, I don't care. I do believe there is a definite niche in the future for Android outside of tablets, outside of phones, outside of Android Wear watches, either desktop or tablet or laptop type atmosphere. I do believe there's a future to it because so many people know Android, so many people are comfortable using Android. I think it almost might be an easy transition to the desktop for some users. So I stumbled across this and I bookmarked it. It's a console OS. It's trying to make a quote-unquote desktop port of Android. And I know it's only a matter of time. I don't know who's going to get there first. I don't know who's going to do it the best. But these guys are trying. You can right now get the download, but I believe what they're actually trying to do is work on a Kickstarter-type fundraising goal, if I'm not mistaken. That's what I thought I read the other day. Yeah, they have a Kickstarter link right on their homepage.
There we go.
No seconds to go. So they wanted a $50,000 goal. They got $78,000. So their goal was met. They're going to keep moving forward on this. Right now you can download it, but you have to register. I'm going to probably do that here in the next day or so. To get a copy of this, try it, play with it, because I do think it will serve a need. Dare I say, like my son, as a one-off computer that also has games built into it in an interface that's really easy for him to understand and his younger brother to understand, this might be a good thing. I don't know.
Yeah, I just booted up the trailer for this on their Kickstarter page, and he has a variety of machines behind him. I'm looking at a MacBook Pro, a PC, what looks like a yoga tablet, even a Microsoft Windows Surface tablet with a keyboard, attached keyboard. And I don't know if it's actually running this or not, but that's pretty interesting.
Yeah. Again, it's one of those things. I definitely think it has a place. I just don't know where and I don't know when.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of those things. Sooner or later, I think you are going to walk into a Best Buy or something and look, and there'll be on the side Android, quote-unquote, game, actual good game consoles, Android laptops, and Android desktops.
Yeah, because the only limitation for the software, or for, I should say, the only limitation for like high-end gaming is going to be the hardware. But if you look at higher-end Android hardware, I'm thinking of like the Shield tablet. I'm thinking of the Chromebook Pixel. You know, it's capable. You know, if you can get the right components into one of these machines, you're going to have a better experience, and you're going to be able to run those high-end applications. For instance, you know, there's already some quote-unquote decent video editors available on Android. Yes, they do have their limitations, yeah. Their payment structures, etc. But the fact that you can edit video on a mobile platform, if you told someone that 10 years ago, they would say, no way. No way. So the fact that we've come that far, and that you're exactly right, Dor. Several companies, I'm thinking Ouya, I'm thinking Mad Catz, I'm thinking, NVIDIA, they've all put out mobile and or set-top box style Android-based machines that can run a variety of this software. And you're only going to see people building off of those innovators, those ground floor people, and making either more powerful machines, or as the operating system matures, as we've seen from now through Lollipop, being able to utilize better hardware and utilize it not to the fact where it's cranking it up to 11, but they'll be able to run Core with lower power, etc. You're going to see this platform bloom even more. And of course, we're talking about this because, of course, Android is based on Linux.
Yes, and supposedly Google is looking at making hybrid 2-in-1 laptops that run both Chrome OS and Android, where you can interactively switch back and forth. And my guess is maybe like the Surface-esque, pull the lid off, and then you have yourself a full tablet. So if that kind of thing happens, expect a lot of other hardware manufacturers to jump on board.
I don't think it's a matter of if, but when. I would like to think by the end of this year, if not next year, because you can't argue with sales figures. And you look at Amazon best-selling laptops the past 2 years straight, if not a little bit longer, have at least 40, if not 60% of the top 10 have all been Chromebooks, and that ain't by accident.
Right. Yeah. Now, what I'm going to bring next is definitely a little bit different. But also, I'll say this: the Linux community literally whined and complained like a child on Google Plus, at least from what I saw, about Google Drive support in Linux. Well, it does appear like they are going to come out with a Google Drive client for Linux, so expect that to come soon. And the reason I mentioned it is because one of the screenshots for this next distribution I found has an icon that makes it look like there's Google Drive in it, but there isn't, but there's something. Okay, this next distribution is called Easy, I guess. Ezey, Easy, and it's Linux Made Easy.
I can't help but think of Eazy-E when I read this.
I know. Let's just say I don't think this distribution has a venereal disease, so I think we're okay.
Yeah. Or has singles about killing cops.
Yes. Well, it could, but I don't know.
Okay, and we don't know that.
We don't know that yet. Let's not prejudge.
That's right.
And it's the description in this that got me. It says, the Eazy main goal is to provide IT students an easy Linux distribution to learn and play with. Okay, IT students. That caught my eye, okay? Because I've seen literal student distributions, And we've seen pen testing distributions, I mean, all kinds of stuff. So this one, see, appears like it's trying to hit that other niche. And I know Cody's heard me say it so many times, he's probably sick about it, is I like distributions trying to hit a niche. So I like the idea of a distribution that's trying to be geared towards IT people to learn Linux. I don't know how good they do of a job, but they're the only people I know trying to do it. So I wanted to just give them a mention. If anyone out there is just learning IT stuff and they want to learn Linux as well, check out EZEY Linux.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to pass this along to a friend of mine. And she, here's the thing. If you're just the quote-unquote average Joe out there and you say, I want to get a job in IT or I'm going to get a job in computer security, without knowing anything or without doing any research, you automatically think you have to run within Windows, you would think. For instance, she's never run Linux before, and she was dead set on buying this high-end laptop where she already has a MacBook Pro. I said, you could just install Windows and Linux on that because you're going to need to be familiar with at least all three environments, at the very least, yeah, somewhat, to have, you know, you're going to need to know the playing field from either end. But if you're going to IT, you got to learn Linux, I was telling her. So I'm looking at this distro. Let me bring up the link one more time. Oh, dear. Oh, here we go. Yeah, so the features, easy to use, made for IT students, KVM, Vert, ManRager support, UNet Bootin', which is great, Fedora Live CD Creator, good, XBMC, WPS Office, Steam, and Skype, all pre-installed. That's a good swath of user cases and software that you should know if you're going to be in IT. And yes, niche distros, I would rather have, I mean, let's just say for the sake of argument, there's 1,000 distros out there. Okay, let's scale it back. Let's say there's only 100 distros in there, which we know isn't the case, but let's just say there's 100. Do I want 89 of them to be all-purpose? No, because then I have 89 options, and then 11 toward niche or 11 that just do this. If you want to be successful, you have to have a differentiating factor, whether that's your user environment, the desktop environment, whether it's your package management system, how you display that to the user, whether it's your pre-installed software or your icon set. There's a variety of things. But having these niche distros, even though they might be built off of Debian or Ubuntu, whatever, there is value in them if there's a large enough user base, or frankly, forget everybody else. If it's something that's going to benefit you as a person, give it a try. Chances are, it doesn't cost any money. You're just investing your time to potentially find a new workspace to get things done better or to learn. And if you're doing that, and if you're researching these enough to go at least think to yourself, that might be a good option. Let me try that for a week or a month or 90 days, whatever the case. Worst case scenario, you're going to come out of it knowing what your specific needs are as a user or as a student, and you'll have that much better information to go on to your next distro.
Yeah, and I think that's the hardest thing for new Linux people to, I don't want to say get through their heads, but the most unusual thing they have to first digest, which is don't just look for a distribution to install. Stop and think about your actual needs and look for a niche that fits that need. And the reason I say this is because there's so many distributions based off Ubuntu or based off of Debian or based off of Fedora. So in reality, for most of those distributions, if you want support, you look at what they're based off of. So if you run Linux Mint, for the most part, you don't go to Linux Mint to look for help because 98%+ of the code is Ubuntu code. So you go look right for Ubuntu support. You know, any other yeah distro like that applies. I'm not just picking on Mint. They're all like that. So look for the niche. Shoot for the niche. Try the niche. There's never any harm in trying to do an installation, playing with it, and seeing if it meets your needs. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But at least you know.
With as easy as the guided installations are now to even, what, 5-6 years ago when I first started installing distros, and with how easy, with the guided installation, the setup, and the faster burn-in, quote-unquote, process that can happen with the distro and the hardware you're running, you could literally install one every week or every 48, 72 hours and bang through them that quick to find that one that cycles you. But don't run into the distro hopper mentality of almost along the lines of Goldilocks and the Three Bears. Oh, this one was just a little too flashy. This one, it worked really well, but I didn't really like the color set. Find something that works for you and then realize, wait a minute, I could take a step back and customize this to basically however I want to.
Right. Yeah, in database, it's called normalization. You go as fine-grained, detailed, and grouping and organization as you can, but then you take a step back because you'll never meet that fine-end goal of normalization, or else you'll have it too normalized and you have to denormalize your database. So when you shoot for the niche, go think as far in as you can and then pull it back a notch, because it's always going to take some amount of configuration at the end or installation of something at the end to meet your final goals, but you can typically get close.
Yeah, you don't want to get too specialized too, because whatever your computer needs are now, in 90 days they could be different. In a week they could be different. You just don't know. But the key is to do your research, make an informed decision, try something. If you don't think it's for you, then guess what? You have a lot more options. Try something else. But don't give up. And don't just run something for an hour and go, I don't know about this. I'm going to try this one. Because then you're wasting your time not developing your skill set, not becoming comfortable in the general environment, rather than trying to find that perfect thing. And trust me, you're never going to find it.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, what I got next is, I'm going to say, is geared for the very small office, home office, entrepreneur, developer type person. It's called UBOS at uboss.net, UBOS.net. It is for the Raspberry Pi, but you can also get it for x86, x64 processors. I love the idea of this because it's a simple installation that once you have it installed, it's designed to be basically a server or a headless server type interface where you have it running in a corner and you can spin up multiple instances of OwnCloud, WordPress, MediaWiki, and a couple other apps like that to do global updates on the entire operating system and everything installed. You simply just log in, type ubos-admin space update, and it updates everything kind of thing. This might actually grow into being a low-level development portal hub resource for small companies. Right now, I think it's a little bit small, but I think it's going to only get bigger. I will say that. Really good idea, in my opinion. I do want to download this and play with it just so I can spin up multiple versions of WordPress and MediaWiki and see how it all stacks up, see how it all handles.
So, Dor, for the layman, let's break this down, because this is the first time I've seen this, and I'm reading it, and the way I'm understanding it is that it is a low-level, right? I don't even know if that's the right term. It's a Linux distro, but it automates much of the administration. So for instance, I can install this on a, I'm spitballing here. I can install this on a Raspberry Pi and then use it to run OwnCloud, to like run an OwnCloud server.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Or I guess a variety of things. So it's kind of like a base level OS to then have a specialized piece of software running on it to serve a purpose. Would that be an easy way of understanding that?
Yes. And from what I gather, some of those tools aren't super easy to upgrade. Like OwnCloud historically wasn't super easy to upgrade. This makes it sound like if you're on OwnCloud 7 and you want to upgrade to OwnCloud 8, you just issue a single command and it does everything in the background. It keeps your files intact, keeps your database intact, but it performs an upgrade to the OwnCloud instance. And it's specifically designed to also be able to run on RAID or just a standard hard drive. So it looks to me like they want to become the OS choice for development centers. Like if you want to start to create servers and lease them out to people to do development on, you could use this as your backbone.
Okay, so it's more of a kind of a stripped down distro to help with not only the installation but maintenance and upgrading of specific software.
Yeah, that's what it sounds okay. like.
All right, cool. Yeah, then that sounds good. Because let me tell you, I mean, dude, you know just as well as I do. People, like, man, I want to run my own email server. I'm sick of Dropbox. I want to run my own cloud server at home. But then they get into the nitty gritty of what it may take to get that going. They're like, I'm gonna put that on my to-do list. Whereas if this can facilitate not only the installation and maintenance, but also the upgrade path, because, dude, if you want to talk about upgrading from WordPress version X to WordPress version Y, talk to Dor. He will tell you some growing pains involved with that as he's experiencing it right now. But if you had a playground, as it were, with which to facilitate the upgrade process and the maintenance of that, it would be beneficial.
Absolutely, yes.
Cool.
Yeah, and anything that can lighten your load of administration, I'm all for.
Yeah, because that's more background stuff. The faster you can get to using the software and the hardware for its intended use, that's where you want to be anyway. So why not get there faster as you can? And especially having help on the maintenance side and upgrade paths, yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah, and of course, unless you want to be an administrator where your main talent is upgrading instances of WordPress and Cloud Drupal and other stuff, then
right,
this isn't a distro for you. But I don't want to be that guy. I don't want that to be my talent. Okay. Now, this next list, I'm not going to lie, I sent a copy of this to Venstone, and I asked him to just look at this and give a quick eval on his next show. So if you want to hear a guy three, whatever, I don't know what the vernacular is for that. Three guys, now there's, that's right, forgot.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to hear the quintuplet set of people who spend probably just as much time gaming in Linux as I do parenting or breathing, then check out Linux Gamecast and let's see what they have to say about it. But at least a couple of these games I've heard of. I've never heard of the domain, though. It's called Bebomb, BEBOM.com, and it's the top 15 best Linux games for 2015, which, of course, is impossible because 2015 isn't over, but this is a list, a preemptive list, if you will. And at least a couple of these games I have heard of. Battle for Westnoth is actually, I know, an old game that's went through a couple iterations, and it's technically open source, and it's been ported to multiple platforms. And I know more than a couple of people tell me if you want to play a solid Linux game, a turn-based strategy game, you need to check out Battle for Westnoth. There was a couple other games on this that just caught my attention that just looked good. The Dark Mon, I believe I heard them speak of before. Everyone should have heard of. It's going through a big, huge, crazy upgrade here pretty soon, or it is in the process of it, so it should only get better. Zero AD, I know I've heard of more than a couple times. Borderlands 2, we talked about on here. XCOM Enemy Unknown. I know more than a couple people are really up on XCOM and the idea of playing XCOM, so there's another one. Another one that I know everyone's heard of on here is Counter-Strike Global Offensive, which I do believe is an older game, but, you know, still a game. And then Sid Meier's Civilization, if you haven't heard of that game.
Yeah, by looking at this list, I mean, I shouldn't say I agree with. I'm not familiar with about the first half, but the second half I'm looking at, well, like Super Tux Kart, number 5, of course, updates to that is fantastic. You think Mario Kart, but on Linux, it's fantastic. The back half I'm looking at, Zero AD, then Dota 2, of course, Borderlands 2, all the work Aspyr has done from last year moving forward is fantastic as far as porting games to Linux. They are one of the best companies as far as bringing fantastic games to Linux. So kudos to them. XCOM Enemy Unknown, Counter-Strike, of course, how could you not love Counter-Strike, Sid 5, Metro Last Light, and Football Manager. Yeah, it's we're in the realm now of not just B and C grade titles. We're talking AAA titles available on this platform, and in most cases, natively, if not well done ports. Now, I'm thinking like Witcher 2. We're still seeing some garbage ports done. Okay, and I'm going to mention Linux Gamecast now and again next week, but if you ever want to see like their best review ever, I'm serious, their best review ever. Well, in one of the top five best reviews ever they've ever done, watch the review on Witcher 2. Fantastic. It's lovely.
No, it won't take you that long at all. It's definitely one of their most passionate
reviews. Yes, it's one of their most well thought out reviews on the Linux Gamecast. But Pedro Mateus, I'll have to hit him up again. But he, first of all, wanted to thank us for the mention on the show, and you're welcome, by the way, because their content is fantastic. But one of the things I've addressed on last show, and we've addressed in the past, is that their show isn't necessarily family friendly. However, they do have it's either an RSS feed with links to the show, or somewhere on the website they can reference, which is literally just kind of like show notes. Yeah. You just want the nitty-gritty, and of course that's just information, it's just references. So I will have that link, I'll post it in the show notes.
I don't know if that link is for everyone. I think that link might be for Patreon.
He told me I'd be feel free, if I remember correctly, he said I was free to share it on the show. Okay. If it's not in the show notes for this episode, I will share it on next week. But yeah, it was specifically sent, but he sent it as a comment in a Google Plus response, gotcha. And I couldn't find it before the show. So yeah, if you're not, anyway, yeah.
What a super quick, Dota 2. I don't believe I've ever heard of Dota 2, and that was one of the games you said you have heard of.
Yeah, Dota is, you know what League of Legends is?
Oh, unfortunately, yes.
Yeah, it's a MOBA. Dota, I'm going to get lambasted here if I get this wrong. I believe Dota is Defense of the Ancients. Anyway, it was a Blizzard game. I believe it belonged to Blizzard. It's a MOBA. It's literally, if you think of League of Legends and Dota 2 now, the sequel, they are literally the most played. Go ahead.
So just a quick question. I'm trying to picture the gameplay in it. And what I remember about League of Legends, while it is interactive in real time, you don't actually like control the people's fist when they're fighting. You just say attack.
Right. For those of you who are mildly interested or really interested in these games, I urge you to download Steam. If you haven't already, or you can just go to YouTube and watch it. That's why I first watched it. Watch the documentary Free to Play. It will go in depth on this genre of game and speak more specifically about Dota 2. And it's a documentary, but it's also kind of it's a narrative because it follows several of these professional teams of these kids who play this like for money. Because Dota 2 and League of Legends are literally the number one and number two played games throughout the world. You have professional gaming leagues in countries, like in Korea, esports is their national sport. They literally have, you know, teams devoted to StarCraft, to Dota, to League of Legends. And now you have even some professional StarCraft players or guys who are really into World of Warcraft moving over to playing League of Legends and Dota because that's where the money is. That's where the eyes are. If you open up twitch.tv and if you look at the top 50 streams, a lot of them are going to be Dota or League of Legends, period.
Gotcha.
And they will have they will have hundreds of thousands, if not millions of views simultaneously, as opposed to I hate to admit this. If you look at a Street Fighter thread, it's going to have significantly less.
Oh, viewers. That's a shame too. That's all I got to say.
Fine. But here's the thing:
Street Fighter.
Man. That's right. But the thing is, the games are free to play. Now, if you want to get extra characters, abilities, costumes, special hats, whatever, that stuff costs money. But that's the allure of it, and even low-end PCs can play these games. So that's why I don't want to say it's not like if you think of Farmville as far as like a, I'm going to lure you in and get all this money out of you. Like, I don't think it's dirty like that, but it's a really good game. And if you want to think of the style of gameplay, I believe the way that they explain it very well, and one of the ways that kind of unlocked it in my mind was that imagine it between like a cross between soccer and chess, but you, because in chess you have different archetypes, different characters who have different move sets. But overall, you're trying to either take over a piece of land on the field or score points by getting into that area. And there are a lot of different ways you can accomplish that. There are a lot of different characters you can use to accomplish that, but you're playing offense and defense because both teams are trying to either attack or defend both areas, because you can win a variety of ways. So, yeah, it's fantastic. Check out Free to Play. It's a documentary made by Valve, who is the current developer of Dota. Fantastic.
Gotcha. Yeah, and that's cool. And it does look like Dota is free to... I mean, that's one thing. Free to install and play diminishes such a barrier of entry for anybody, no matter what ecosystem you're in, whether you're literally, you know, barely above poverty level or you're stinking rich with, you know, 8 cars in your driveway. Free to play just means boom, and you're playing. That kind of game, I just like seeing the atmosphere, but like the League of Legends, I know. I've seen a lot of Android applications in my daily routine of just letting you follow this one team or this one person or this one style or whatever of just this esports thing, and it is really exploding big.
Yeah, I mean, if you think of how big, like, well, for instance, you're a football fan.
I was.
No, whatever. Anyway.
My team lost. Hey, Russ Wilson, do you want to win a second Super Bowl? Nah, I'll pass.
Anyway, I wasn't trying to bring that in to rub it in because I know you're a Seahawks fan, but literally, like, I don't watch sports at all. And when I tell people that, they either understand, which is like 5% of the people I tell, or they look at me like I'm a leper, like I should be excised from society, because why the hell wouldn't you? Anyway, in other parts of the world or in younger demographics, you know, these professional players are viewed as celebrities. They are paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to play a game. And if you think that's ridiculous, all you have to do is look at the NFL, look at Major League Baseball, look at NHL, look at any, especially international soccer, same thing.
Well,
different skill set, exact same thing.
Well, no, here's the thing. Look at those sports, then look at the people you never even see on the field, and look at how much they're getting paid.
Oh, right.
So nothing is outrageous in this world. The only thing that is outrageous is the fact that us aren't getting paid that kind of money. I mean, in reality, come on, that's the only thing.
Somebody better put a Bible under your hand because you just testified.
Right, and it's only getting bigger, people. Only going to get bigger, period.
Yep.
Because it's one thing to watch professional, quote-unquote, sports on national broadcast television and idolize someone you can never be. You could never do the things that they are doing. You watch these gamers playing, and it's not as quote-unquote far-fetched that they're just normal people who are, you know, who put their time in kind of thing. So they're much more realistic, I think, to the younger audience.
And as sick as this sounds, this is going to make you throw up in your mouth for the majority of our listeners, and especially Dore. The average age that one of these gamers retires is, I think, 25. Because they literally don't have the physical dexterity to keep up.
I believe it. I don't believe it. I know it. Okay? Because literally, your reflexes, your coordination, everything drops off when you're in your 20s for gaming. That's what. And now if Jeff Hallish hears this, which he won't, because this ain't a Windows show, he will argue with me. But once you hit your mid-20s, your late 20s, you just can't keep up anymore.
I heard a reference to Windows.
Yep, you did. Okay, next link. I'm bringing this, and I was talking literally in a Voxer chat earlier to Mr. Zoak. Some of you out there might have heard of Mr. or Mrs. Zoak in the past. They're just good people, that's all I gotta say. Really good guy. And he almost apologized, he said, because he was a couple episodes behind in this show. Not that this show even publishes every week, he's just behind. To which I said, no, you don't apologize, okay? The meaning of this show is that it's not extremely time sensitive, okay? Once in a while we pull something out that, you know, like the bundle thing, but, you know, most of it isn't. But once in a while I'd literally announce something hoping in a month or two it's going to reach a better level. It's going to be a better product. It's going to be a more solid application or whatever. This is the example I give for that. I want to say it's pronounced Lodka, L-A-K-K-A. Right. L-A-K-K-A.tv. This, to me, is a gorgeously presented emulation station, is the word I'm going to use in air quotes. This is a dedicated niche distribution for emulating of games. Okay, here's all of the emulators that come baked in with you doing no work whatsoever. Okay, 3DO, 4DO, PlayStation, Beetle PSX, Super Nintendo, Super Famicom, Nintendo DS, arcade, MAME, that kind of thing, NES, Famicom, Game Boy, Game Boy Color, Sega Master System, Sega GG, which is the, I want to say Game Genie with that in it, Sega Master Drive, Sega CD.
Sega GG is Sega Game Gear. That was their handheld.
Game Gear, thank you. Lynx, the handheld version.
Sorry, Lynx, yep.
Neo Geo Pocket, Neo Geo Color, PC Engine, PCFX, Virtual Boy, Wonder Swan Color, never even heard of that, Nintendo 64, PlayStation Portable, they have Doom built in, of course, because it's nothing without Doom, Atari 7800, Super NES, Super Famicom, a Atari 2600, Game Boy Advance, and something, Vectrex, V-E-C-T-R-E-X, and Atari Jaguar. All built in, no extra work needed, no actual management in this distribution. You just install it, and then if you want to add games to it, you browse to it over a network share. But the real kicker is when you go to the website, this is what I really loved about this distribution. You go to the website, you click Get Latka right from the main section, and then it basically starts you through a wizard process where you pick Linux, Windows, or Mac. Okay, if you pick Linux, the next option you get says, what do you want to install it on? Now it says Raspberry Pi, PC, QBox, Hummingboard, Banana Pi, QBoard 2, and QB Truck. Now, some of them are work in progress. Some of them are experimental. Only the Raspberry Pi and the PC have a stable release. And it's not really a stable release. It might be a stable release, but it's not a complete, polished release. Because in the main menu, there's driver options, general, video, shader, font, audio input, overlay menu, UI patch, playlist, core, network, archive, user options, path options, blah, blah, and some of them don't work because they're not fully implemented yet. So it's not a fully baked thing yet. But with a start like this, I think this is going to be fantastic. Now, that was only the second step out of six steps. After you pick what piece of hardware you're going to put it on, it then basically tells you, here's your downloads that are available to you, okay? You click the download link. Then it literally tells you exactly what you have to do to get this on the install media, okay? Then it tells you, you know, after boot, here's what you do. And it literally shows you hand by hand, holding your hand through the entire process. While their distribution is not heavily polished, it's not completely done, you know, focused yet, their interface in their web browser is. And if that is any sign of how this is going to run here in like a month or 2 months, this is going to be a fantastic distribution to tell people to run if they want to run emulators.
Well, now, just a second. Hold on. So I went through the steps you were just speaking about, and when it came to clicking the download locker link, I selected Raspberry Pi. It says, this step is independent of your OS choice. The downloaded image can be used on any OS. So on a Raspberry Pi, you could run this under Raspbian, I would assume.
Well, yeah. What they mean is, regardless of your operating system, you're going to have to get this on to the install media, I think, the same way.
Okay, got it.
So, so what you do is you have to, on Linux, DD the image over to a drive. On Windows, you would have to use like WinImager to put it on the drive. But then after that, it's all this. Because there is no Windows on the Raspberry Pi.
for those of you who aren't watching live, I have a ear-to-ear grin watching this. With emulators, you got two. Okay, in my opinion, if I'm to install an emulator or a suite of software like this, there's two hurdles, right? One, installation, and two, what is the presentation? What's the consumer-facing presentation of the software? For those of you who are familiar with either the PSP or PlayStation 3, the way they have the different icons, you cycle from left to right and then up and down with the options, it's much like that. And this is... The icon set almost reminds... Oh, my God.
All right.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. My Google crashed again. Anyhow, the icon set almost looks material design-esque. Mm-hmm. Would you agree somewhat? Yeah.
Yeah, curved edges, flat looking.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it looks great. I have a very particular, specific project that I have to order. I'll tease this. I have to order a Dremel kit for what I'm planning on doing. And this is going to be, without just looking at it now, this is going to be the heart of this project. This looks awesome. Very good find, Door.
Yeah, and now here's another thing I like about it. Okay, when you browse over a network, okay, you basically just find a folder called ROMs. You open it up. It doesn't matter. Any of those emulators I said, it doesn't matter. You just drop that ROM in the general folder. It determines what to display when it loads up. So when it loads up, when I go to my SNES, it automatically picks up, whether it's a zip file or not, this is an SNES game, display it in the SNES settings. I will say, using a PlayStation 3 controller hardwired, when you're in a game, if you hit the main PlayStation button, it brings you back to this menu where you can easily load a state or save a state. No special keyboard combination required to do that. That was one of the little things I think they're doing really right in this emulator. Yeah, I'm just really impressed. I will say, running it on an Intel NUC with HDMI out, I was getting no audio, so I got to see what I can do about that, because that's kind of a showstopper right now. But I do believe in very little time they're going to have these kinds of issues completely fixed.
For the purposes of your current installation on the NUC, try to see, the NUC has to have like a headphone jack, right?
Yeah. I'm 99% sure it would work, yeah.
Yeah, try that, because with some of the hardware tinkering around I've done lately, I'm able to use my headphone jack for a certain audio, but then not the main audio output jack on the... Yeah, anyway, but here's something else on here that I'm going to ask you if you've experienced this yet, but on the main page, under the very first sort of topic header, under Powerful, it says, built on top of the famous RetroArch emulator, which you've spoken about in great detail, Laka is able to emulate a large range of hardware and has some useful features such as braid-like rewinding, joypad hot plug, and video streaming. Yeah. Now, specifically, in reference to the braid-like rewinding, Braid is a very popular indie platformer where, let's say, it has a rewind feature. So let's say you jump off a platform and die. You can then rewind to that point where you jumped off the platform and do it from a different angle. Right. There's all sorts of possibilities. So I wonder how that plays out, because the possibilities for that seem limitless. Have you experienced any of that in action with this, with Laka?
Honestly, I have not tried the rewind feature, just because by default it's not connected to a key on the gamepad, and I was just strictly playing gamepad game. It's a key on the keyboard. I will say, on the old RetroArch, I was able to do it. It was definitely interesting, and it definitely caught me off guard a little bit first time I did it, because it's completely foreign to everything I've ever thought about when
you're
running.
You're just able to rewind, like, in the middle of a game?
Yeah, I mean, it's like everything literally rewinds as you're playing it, just like you have a time machine in your pocket.
That's insane. Oh, wow. Yeah, because, I mean... Dude, like I said, the ear-to-ear grin. I'm looking at all these systems, and I'm thinking of all the classic games I played when I was, a very, very younger person. And a lot of them are those ridiculous, like, you know, you think NES, I'm thinking, you know, Mega Man 2, I'm thinking Zelda, SNES, Final Fight, you know, Mega Man X, a lot of Mega Man, Sonic on Sega, a Neo Geo Pocket, there were some great titles on there, etc. Game Gear, Prince of Persia, wow. In fact, Prince of Persia, they had a game, Sands of Time on PS2,
yes,
where they actually had the rewind feature in the game.
Well, so, I literally think that game had to have it, because everyone remembered the old Prince of Persia and how you were so unbelievably upset when you died that they literally had to put that in just so scorn people from the previous game would give it a shot.
Yeah, but you know what I say to those people? Get better.
Well.
Pansy. Okay, die as many times as you need to become more, to either so angry at the game that you continue to get better, or to just give up and move on to something else.
Right. Well, I'll say one of the other options in the game, in the Emulator Rush, I thought was really unique, which reminded me how I used to cheat on my Android game sometime to beat my kid, where I would get a higher score than him just because, was they literally have an also mode on here called Slow-Mo, where hypothetically you're at a part of the game where you have to be really precise, and it's really hard to do. Well, just put the game in slow-mo.
I'm not even going to dip my toe into the philosophical implications of using that in order to beat your child at a video game.
You don't have to. Trust me. My wife and Steve Chirino already tongue-lashed me for it, but guess what? It doesn't matter. You know why? You know why?
Because
I beat my kid. And as far as he's concerned right now, I'm still the man. I will say I did literally play on the emulator earlier today, Legend of Zelda, Ocarina of Time, got to the first boss, Gohan, in the Deku Tree.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't even get a chance to drop its eggs, didn't even touch me, and I beat him. And my oldest son literally stood up and said, "Oh, yeah, he didn't even touch you, Dad. You're the man." And all I could say was, "Thank you. Thank you, son."
We need to get a shirt, because I'm envisioning this shirt, right? It's an 8-bit character of you holding up a controller, much like Link would hold the Triforce. And in that classic 8-bit Zelda text, in big, bold font, it says, "I beat my kids." And then in tinier text beneath it, it says, "at every video game."
Yeah, I'll agree with that. And okay. I will say, I love the fact that a game that's now, I think, 12 years old, 15, whatever. However,
you know, Ocarina, it's like Ocarina of Time?
It's like pushing 20.
17 or 18 years. Came out in like 98, 97, 98.
Right, and I love the fact that a game, quote-unquote, that old can still get my kids' attention because they love watching me play that game.
And if you want to see something really cool with that game, go on YouTube and search for Ocarina of Time Blind. We talked about this on some show years ago. But there's a blind guy who hasn't been blind his whole life. He played the game when he had sight, but he can literally play that game and almost speed run it, basically, just based on all the audio cues in the title.
Well, that was one of the things. This game was one of the few games that he said on a console did depth of sound right and stereo right. So he could literally, he knew if he turned a little bit to the side and he heard, and then he turned a little bit back and heard again, he could tell how far something was and exactly the direction it was. And that, to me, just blew my mind.
Yeah. Still, wow. Laka.tv. Definitely got to check it out. I cannot wait to install this.
Yes. Now, for the more advanced Linux person, I don't even know what the hell this is based off of. If I had to guess anything, I'd guess Arch, because this is not your daddy's Linux distribution. You plug up a keyboard, you can't do anything, okay? You cannot control Alt and F into another TTY at all. There's no way for you to get a command line, from what I can tell, anywhere hardwired plugged up to this thing. Now, you can SSH into it over the network and do stuff, but I have no idea. I didn't look really in depth at it. I have no idea what the hell this thing is even running, because I tried to do a sudo. That didn't work. I tried to say apt-get. That didn't work. And thus, I just started copying games on and started playing it. So whatever the hell this is even based off of, I don't know. But I know focusing on standing on the shoulders of giants before you, aka RetroArch, can only be a good thing. Only be a good thing. And I think these guys are off to a really, really good start. I mean, RetroArch would like to be everything when it comes to emulated games, I would think. I mean, we had him on a show once on Android AppX, I would think, but I think he would also be really happy with everyone making these interfaces to handle it. And I will say, I loved the fact that in the input options, it was very easy to switch the input, to switch around player one, player two, to pick a gamepad or a PS remote. It didn't have crazy hardcore like SDL2, thank you, Pedro, reassigning of keys kind of thing. But that's one of the things I'm sure that will be coming.
And RetroArch by itself, if you look at the interface, it's already really nice. Mm-hmm. You know, and you might take a step back and look, well, how can we make that better? And then you see Laka, and you're like, those guys made it look better. That's cool. And the fact that it supports PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360 remotes out of the box is great. Because if you're talking about some of the most widely available controllers on the market right now, and some of the ones that arguably are the best as far as butt configuration, comfortability, and the fact that they have dual analog sticks. Because, as I spoke earlier, the limitation of this software is only the hardware. At a certain point, you know, you'll start to see emulators for higher-end systems, like you'll start to see more Xbox and PS2 stable, powerful emulators as time goes on, and it's going to be reliant on the hardware. So, yeah, very cool.
Okay. I did know this, but I forgot. This is based off of OpenELEC. OpenELEC is a custom from scratch Linux distribution that also basically runs XBMC on it. So what I'm gathering then is this interface is actually nothing more than a streamlined XBM interface, maybe plug-in to it. So that's what this was based upon. So super niche media-based distribution on, then they put on top of that RetroArch and their interface to the game. So I guess that explains, quote unquote, what it's running.
Looks great. Looks to work great. I can't wait to install it because, man, I love getting down on some Mega Man 2.
There you go.
And if I can do that on my modern machine or on my Raspberry Pi, why not?
Yeah, and I will say I was really genuinely liking the fact that they supported Banana Pi out of the box. And I'm going to just do this little mini rant real quick.
There we go.
Few people, I think, in the world in podcasting were as uppity about the Raspberry Pi. Okay, I became really bitter at the fact that the Raspberry Pi GPU is not open. Okay, it's closed. It's completely closed. Which is why, in the last year or two, we've seen a drastic change in the performance of the Raspberry Pi, quote-unquote, when it comes to GUI stuff, because it wasn't open. So it's literally like fumbling around the dark to try to make it better. I personally like the Banana Pi more. Banana Pi was twice as powerful, if not more, than the old Raspberry Pi, and it cost around $50, okay? Since then, the Raspberry Pi just came out with a new one, a lot more powerful, whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm still not going to buy it. I'm going to buy the Banana Pi. The Banana Pi is 100% open hardware. Joe from Code for Sale, he's with me on this. Open will always be better. Now, of course, I'm not going to have the software support. I'm not going to have the operating system support that the Raspberry Pi has, but I know what support I do have. It's going to run really good. So I'm a firm believer in the Banana Pi for really low-end computing, especially if I can do gaming on it. That helps.
Yeah, definitely benefits either way. The Raspberry Pi was revolutionary as far as, you know, having a small single board machine, but then you're seeing all sorts of projects spring up around that idea, that form factor, that price point, you know. You think of, you know, the Arduino, the BeagleBone Black, comparably priced, power and specs also comparable. But yeah, if you can keep it all open, then you know you're not locked into specific upgrade paths or specific software, and you can actually, you know, view the code, etc., if you know how to read it. Some people do, some people don't. And it's not the fact that you're... What was the term you used again? It wasn't curmudgeon. It was as far as wanting to use the Banana Pi over the Raspberry Pi.
I don't know. I just like open that. I'm becoming gruntled. I don't know.
Don't consider it negative. Just say something along the lines of like I always tell my wife, I'm like, you're not picky. You're just selective.
Right.
Or you're particular, because when it comes to it, it's your money. It's your time. Time equals money. You're spending your time and money on using these machines. And as something we've always said, especially you, for many years, support those who support you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll say, if you're at all interested in the micro PC, the mini PC game, the market, the genre, the classification of computing, follow me on Google Plus. Just look for Door-to-Door Geek, all one word, DoorToorGeek on Google Plus, and just follow me. I literally come across 10 plus of these a week, and I try to post them to Google Plus. We only talk about 1 out of 40 that I come across. Yeah. But there's a lot of them that are really interesting. Some of them are coming, not here yet. Some of them are here. Some of them might be a little bit pricey compared to something else. Some of them might be a little bit low-end compared to something else. But this is literally exploding everywhere. I mean, it's literally one of those genres of computing that is literally going to go insane in the next year or two, especially because Windows is now supporting less hardware. I mean, with every Linux distribution, they like to have more hardware, but they become more compatible with more depth of hardware is the way I like to believe it. Windows for years needed more hardware, more hardware, more hardware, more hardware. Windows 10 is finally coming back some. 7 needed less than Vista compared to what was new in the market. 8 needed less than 7 when it was new in the market. 10 is supposedly going to need even less when it's new in the market. So we're going to see Windows on all kinds of crazy devices, which also means we're going to see Linux on all kinds of crazy devices. These are the kind of things that really get me excited and giddy.
Well, yeah, because I mean, you're talking about the benefits, not only smaller footprint as far as hardware specs go, but you're also talking lower power and lower cost. And if you can buy the hardware for cheaper and your power bill isn't going to suffer too much by running the hardware, it's a win-win.
Yes, and it avails. Now, with the Internet of Things coming in, it's inevitable, a.k.a. everything in your house having an IP address. It'd be nice to have centralized server management with extremely low hardware needs. Also, something that you don't use as your daily desktop, a.k.a. much less likely to break. So if it's a Banana Pi, a Raspberry Pi, a Q-Box, something in the corner sitting isolated, just acting as a server, as a hub for your internet-connected devices, even better, because then you don't have to worry about upgrading. You don't have to worry about, is this flash going to break something? You don't have to worry about adding this PPA is going to change something. You don't have to worry about compiling from sources that are going to change anything. It's just doing its little thing off in the corner, and having such a small device like that, it's also super easy and quick to back up. Much less maintenance, much less work connected to it.
I'm glad you brought up the Internet of Things, because I experienced a power outage recently, and it made me really, really, really realize how dependent myself and my family are on all of our devices in the home. And I guess I told a fib earlier, I didn't really consider this, but I was speaking earlier how we haven't really had bad weather here. We had some really bad wind recently, and when you think of really bad wind, what does that mean? What that means is, in my neck of the woods, one of our main highways, 14 power poles snapped off about 6 to 8 feet up, broke right off, and the poles fell into the highway. That's how windy it was.
Not good.
No. So that happened one Wednesday. It was last Wednesday. It's my day off with the boys. We have our dudes days on Monday and Wednesdays. We hang out, act like dudes, wherever we want, do what we want, because mom's at work. It doesn't matter. So yep. Here's a dude's day. Wake up at 8:30 in the morning to the sound of my smoke alarm chirping. And I think, well, what's that all about? Alarm clock's off. TV won't turn on. Like, oh, it's a power outage. And my immediate thought is, did I pay my power bill? Of course I pay my power bill. I call the local number. Of course it's a power outage. They expect it to be 6 to 8 hours down. I was like, well, forget this. So like, boys, we're going. We went to a nearby town. It's had a little, we called it a dude trip. Left town, saw the power poles on our way out. But my oldest, he is almost four. He had never experienced a power outage before. So he's trying to turn the TV on. He's trying to charge his tablet. And I'm trying to explain to him, like, oh, no, no power. No work. It won't work. Look, and I'm trying to flicking the light off and on. He finally got it. But we left. Then we came back hours later. We were fine. But, yeah, that instance in particular made me think, you know, I really need some battery backups.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, but you got to remember. The internet won't work.
Yeah, because the local ISP is down, so it won't matter. But
yeah, and I'm a firm believer. Say what you will about America, culture, society, whatever. I'm a firm believer if hypothetically tomorrow the entire backbone internet in every shape, way, or form, the World Wide Web, everything went down from the ISP out in the country for 2 weeks, our jail population would double. Because people wouldn't know what to do, so let me just go rob a bank or something. You know, I think it would be really bad. Dare I say, I think
yeah.
The internet keeps people preoccupied enough to do much less bad stuff.
As ironic as it is, we would be left to our own devices. And yeah. Some people wouldn't be able to hang, man. I always joked, like, one time I was left for work in the morning, and I realized I left my smartphone at home. I drove 20 minutes back home to grab it. Because for whatever reason, I was at this train of thought, like I was talking to myself on the way to work, working out a problem or whatever. And I think I'll play some music. And where's my phone? Pat my pockets. Look at the driver's side seat. Wait. As bad as it is now, it's going to be way worse later in the day. Drove back, got it, and almost cradled it. Like, oh, thank God, I found you. And then went to work. It's that sick. It's that much of an obsession. It's that much of an appendage to our everyday. That's what it is. It's an appendage.
It ain't just you, man. It is literally, I believe, everybody except for the people that just sit around and watch Oprah and The Price is Right.
Yep. And speaking of smartphones, I'll make this quick. I loved my OnePlus One, crushed it in a reclining chair accidentally in the reclining mechanism. It's destroyed. Just bought a Nexus 6. Love it. End of review.
Yeah.
Cool.
Best device you had for a week?
I had it for longer than a week. I had it for almost 2 months.
Okay.
Like, it was best, 6-7 weeks.
Best device you had for a month and a half.
I still own it. I haven't paid it off yet. I'm doing that in a couple of weeks. But, you know, it is what it is.
We all have our crosses to bear.
And I bought one of those fancy Nancy wireless pad chargers because I now know that if I put that to charge at the end of the night on my nightstand, it's not going to be anywhere near that chair to get crushed again.
Mm, true, true, true.
So there is that. All right, well, that was the remainder of our topics. Dude, a lot of good stuff this week, Dor. I basically have a lot of action items right now for stuff to go research and install. This is very, very good. You can expect an announcement from me. I'm going to say sometime this year on a project I'm working on.
Sometime this year.
I can make damn sure to do it in the next 10 months. I guarantee it.
Just be like Steve C. and say soon.
No. I'm putting a definitive timeline on it. I have a project I'm working on that will take advantage of LACA for sure, or RetroArch, something along those lines. And I do want to make an official announcement. I think I spoke about this last episode, but I am officially going to Linux Fest Northwest 2015. That is April 25th and 26th. I will be attending. So will Martin Obando, who helps us on this show and is also the host of Geeksters. And we may have some future announcements as far as other people involved in the network who may be able to make it, as far as also what we may be doing. What I would like to see, please send an email to cody@podus.com. I want to make this more of an event because Linux Fest Northwest, it's in my backyard, literally. It's just a few hours away from where I live, and yet I've never been to it. So to have it be a more of kind of an interactive experience with our listenership, I'm thinking of creating a kind of like a scavenger hunt list. So a list of things I need to accomplish and get photo proof of in order to help interact with you while I'm there and to just have a good time. Now, this is completely open to the audience. You guys can send me suggestions all you want. Please don't make anything lewd or rude or crude. I may do them anyway, but I'm not going to post them online. but anything you'd like to see me do or you'd just like to maybe experience through my eyes while I'm there, please send me an email to cody@pondus.com. I will do my best and maybe announce them the list of things I'm committing to doing before I go. So I'm putting that out there.
Very cool.
Cool. All right, Dor, where can we find you online?
You can just look for me on Google+. That is door-to-door geek, all one word. Or you can just go to pondus.com. Get in contact with Pondus itself, mail@pondus.com.
Fantastic. We also should mention the Linux for the Rest of Us Club. That is at pondus.com/Linux for the Rest of Us Club. We are going to be disseminating some special content, some special behind-the-scenes access to how we produce the show, all sorts of cool stuff. And you can go to the website you just mentioned, pondus.com/Linux for the Rest of Us Club, and sign up. It just requires a name and email address. You sign up, and we'll put you on our list, our contact list, for this exclusive club. I was very successful with Android App Addicts. Everyone on that club is having a great time already, and they are automatically eligible just by being a member of the club for any giveaways. And trust me, we're going to have some giveaways. We're going to be giving away some things.
Well, speaking of giveaways, I'll just say that. Yes, speaking of giveaways, the goal is in 2 weeks to announce a giveaway. If you go join the club, you're automatically entered into the giveaway, period. That's what I will say. For every giveaway, that's the first thing you have to do. Now, after that, you might have to respond to a newsletter, email, or something else just to verify you want to be involved in it, because it might be a little bit more niche. Not everyone would want the thing I'll be giving away after that. But if you just go to the show notes for this show, you'll see the link to join the club. Once I get the SSL cert for that domain, I'm going to launch that site on that domain to where registered users can participate in the club, back and forth kind of thing. I didn't know, but apparently that is going to be nearly a $200 a year fee, which is more than the site itself and the hosting itself for a year.
Oh, that I did not know.
You and me both, brother.
Wow. Well, if you want to help with the cost of that, please, especially Pete. Pete, if you're going to be building that PC all by yourself, please use pondus.com/Amazon to order all those parts. Because every Amazon purchase you're going to make, regardless of when or where it is, what you're buying, it doesn't matter. If you use the pondus.com/Amazon affiliate link, we get a little bit of kickback from that. And we do appreciate, in fact, this last month has been the largest listener contribution from that affiliate link, which goes into helping us for hosting, items for giveaways, securing new domains, a bunch of other stuff, etc. So we do appreciate, and here's the thing, with that link, it's stuff you were already going to buy on Amazon anyway. There's no extra work involved. You simply navigate to that URL, make your purchases as normal, and that's it. It being tax refund season, I know that I've already bought a few things. I'm going to buy some more. Use that affiliate link. It does help us out. I appreciate it. And I must say also, if you go to pondus.com/eBay, they have recently changed their payout percentage to affiliate links. Is that correct, Dor?
Yes, sir.
So if you're going to be going on bidding on any auctions on eBay, also use pondus.com/eBay. Same deal. You use that URL. You're going to interface eBay just as you would normally, much like you would Amazon. And we get a little bit of a kickback from any purchase you make on there. And it does go a great length to help out the network. We do appreciate it.
Very cool.
Cool. As always, please visit our friends over at the Accessible Computing Foundation. Go to the acf.tk. You can help those who would otherwise be left behind by technology, those with disabilities. Giving money to this foundation does help those people experience a software in a way they otherwise couldn't. For instance, by contributing to the ACF, you can sign up for as little as $2 a month to give money to them to help the funding and development of software that will go to help people who have a loss of sight, loss of motor skills, who have dyslexia. And a lot of that software and that development goes into Jonathan Nadeau's very specific Linux distribution called Sonar, which is based off of Manjaro. You could visit that site at sonargnulinux.com to read their mission statement and see what that distro is all about. It's fantastic. And if you also go to the ACF, you can read what they're all about. But if you can spare $2 a month, 50 cents a week, that money does go to pay these developers, make that software faster, and make those people create an environment for those folks who are less fortunate to where they can experience technology and the internet. It's a fantastic thing. Every time I see that money come out of my PayPal account every month, I know it's going to a fantastic cause and going to someone worthwhile that I trust running that project as best as he possibly can.
Excuse me.
As always, I'm Cody Cooper. Please contact me on Google Plus, just for Cody Cooper. That's CodyCooper. You can follow me on Twitter at Cody Cooper. You can send me an email directly to Cody@podness.com. If you'd like to send in a email to the show, please send it to podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com. If you'd like to send in a voicemail, please send it to 7076-PODNUTS. That is the number that you would dial in. We don't currently have any voicemails in our queue. We have a couple more emails we'll address next episode. Thank you, Pete, for the email. Hope we gave you some good feedback there. But we'll love some more interaction from our audience. So if you have any question or any comment on the show, please send it through those channels, and we will get them addressed them on the show as best as we can. Thank you very much for downloading and listening to this episode. We look back to being back very soon. And please remember, Linux is not just for the rest of us. It is for all of us. Good night.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.